This is the Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
44 million caregivers are caught up in the silver tsunami sweeping America. This week, we'll talk with an author about the surprising challenges of caregiving.
This is an issue that impacts so many people. Just think about the people that you know. And as our society ages to the tune of 10,000 people turning 65 every day until the year 2030, we are absolutely going to be in need of taking care of each other.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, the Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Hello, folks. This is Leonard Birdsong on the Urban Connection. Glad to be back with you. My guest for today is a certified senior advisor, a gerontologist, a caregiver expert, a consultant, and an author. Her name, Nadine Roberts Cornish. Nadine Roberts Cornish served as a devoted caregiver for her mother for 15 years. She had a 15-year background in public health, social marketing campaigns prior to her mother being diagnosed with a brain tumor. Nadine founded the Caregivers Guardian LLC in 2009. This was a year following her mother's death. And then she wrote a book called Tears in My Gumbo. Nadine, welcome to the Urban Connection. This is Leonard Birdsong. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Leonard.
Well, again, I wanted to get you on because I've had a chance to read your book, and I'm very impressed with it. You are a real dynamo from what I can hear. I don't know when you can sleep. But let me ask you some questions. I know you have all of these specialties. Your book is Tears in My Gumbo. My question is, what's gumbo got to do with caregiving?
Great question. So because I'm from New Orleans, born and raised, gumbo is in my DNA. Gumbo was an integral part of my experience growing up culturally. And as a result of that, all throughout my entire life, you know, every occasion, happy, sad, celebration, if you just needed to feel better, a pot of gumbo was the antidote for that. And so when my mother passed, Leonard, I realized after her passing that I had never sat down to write that recipe, I never recorded her making the gumbo because my entire life, she had been there, right there with me or even on the phone. And so consequently, I was really at a loss when I realized my the gumbo recipe had gone with when my mom left.
Uh-huh.
So the first time I get to make it was during the holidays. And I make the gumbo, and instead of it being the tears of sadness and grief that I had been experiencing, it became tears of joy when I realized I had mastered my mother's gumbo recipe.
Right.
So there we have Tears in My Gumbo. Yes.
That's a great little story. As a matter of fact, I read that you were doing the gumbo, making it for the first time, but you weren't so happy about how it was turning out. You tasted what they call the roux, and you said, oh, it wasn't good, and you went to bed.
It wasn't good. Exactly. It wasn't good. So what happened was I tasted it prematurely, right? And as in any scenario in our lives, as is with the caregiving experience, it is a process. And tasting that gumbo prematurely meant it wasn't ready. It was not ready. The other analogy with gumbo and caregiving is the fact that you can make a pot of gumbo by yourself, but there is nothing like making it in community with people that you love or people that you that are part of your circle that are participating in the process. Same thing with caregiving. You can do it by yourself, but boy, it's so much better if you recruit some help, accept help, and in some instances demand help, because it really isn't a solo journey.
Let's get into caregiving. You say there are five steps of conscious caregiving. Can you tell us something about those?
Absolutely. So as a result of my own personal experience in the decade that I've spent literally working with hundreds of families, Leonard, family caregivers, what I came to understand that there was this process that most people go through, but most people were unaware of the process. So that first step in caregiving is helplessness. And that's self-explanatory. That's what happens when, you know, you get the news, you get the diagnosis, or you learn that your loved one just no longer has the capacity to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a natural part of the process, feeling helpless, right? And in our incapacity to change what the scenario is. And so after helplessness, we move directly from helplessness into recognition. We recognize that we don't know what we don't know. We can be expert in so many areas within our lives, but when it comes to being hit over the head with, you know, the fact that now you're going to need to take care of somebody that's been so self-sufficient all their lives, that is a different pill to swallow, and recognition of the fact that you just don't know and you're going to need to seek answers outside of yourself.
Uh-huh.
And so the next step is process. And in process, that's the step I think that we stay on the longest, because process is when we're figuring it out. We're figuring out the answers to questions that we never knew to ask. We're figuring out resources. We're coming to grips with the fact that Medicare does not pay for long-term care costs.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, that's a rude awakening, right? And so you're processing. You're getting answers. You're seeking support. You're identifying resources and process. You're also coming to grips, Leonard, with what it is that you can and cannot do. Are you the person that should be the primary caregiver in this circumstance? Are you the person that should provide 24/7 care, or should you be the person monitoring and seeing to it that your loved one receives that care? And then from process, we go to the next step, which I call the step of acceptance. Acceptance when we realize we truly are not in control, and that it is a higher source. It is outside of our realm in terms of the things that are happening, and that we must come to grips and accept what is going on. And then the final step is surrender. And with surrender, I say it's not my will, but it's thy will be done.
Yeah.
Releasing the need to control. And with these steps, Leonard, they are cyclical. It's, even though I listed them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you could find yourself in process one day and all the way back to helplessness. You might think you've reached acceptance and you find yourself back at the stage of recognition. And so it is absolutely a cycle.
Well, this is good to know, and I understand just what you're saying. I'm sure there are listeners out there who are caregivers for parents and maybe caretakers for children. I'm a lawyer, as you know, but there are some things I don't understand, because I usually did criminal law and immigration law and that sort of thing. What is the difference between a guardianship and a conservatorship? Can you tell us that?
I certainly can. Thank you for asking that question, because it's an important one to know and understand. And I can assure you that there are many of your listeners out there that are wearing the caregiver hat, because there are more than 40 million caregivers in this country today taking care of a loved one. And so guardianship is important to know, because if a person loses capacity, their capacity to make decisions on their own, then they will need to have someone who is looking after their best interests take over as a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us are experiencing that, because dementia is one of those areas of illness that so many of our seniors are encountering, where guardianship becomes a necessity.
Right.
It becomes a necessity because the individual can no longer make decisions for themselves. And if that person does not put in place the power of attorney, and you can certainly explain the power of attorney and what that is.
Yes.
But if that isn't in place and a person becomes incapacitated and nothing has been put in place, then a guardianship becomes necessary. The guardianship typically refers to the person's day-to-day living and their medical needs.
Uh-huh.
The conservatorship takes care of the financial aspect. that.
I see.
So if they have assets that need to be handled, if they've got bank accounts, if they've got stocks, bonds, etc., then that is handled under a conservatorship.
And the court does both of these, is that right? Or the court grants both of these?
Exactly. The court grants both of those, yes.
All right. Well, now I've cleared that up. You have several stories in your book about people who went into helping loved ones. I don't want you to tell all of them, but give me one that you sticks out in your mind, just so we know the kind of things we're talking about here.
So because you mentioned guardianship and conservatorship, one of my favorite stories that I talk about in the book is the 88-year-old, the 88-year-old twins, who 10 years before the need ever arises, they made sure that their affairs were in order. They completed the necessary power of attorney, the durable medical power of attorney, and they actually indicated that they wanted each other to take care of themselves. Even at 78 years of age, they knew that if something happened, they knew their first preference would be to have each other look after, you know, their affairs.
Yeah, I remember that story.
Yeah. And so this 88-year-old was taken to court by her niece, by her sister's daughter. You think, wow, somebody in their 50s is their mother. Why shouldn't they be the person to take care of their mother's affairs? But in this instance, the mother understood that her daughter had some limitations and also had a different motivation when it came to taking care of her. And so she absolutely knew that she wanted her sister, who was 78 at the time, and by the time this went to court, they were 88 years of age, and the sister petitioned for guardianship and conservatorship for her twin sister, and it was granted, because they had put their affairs in order. And the judge even said to said on that day, she said, even if I wanted to grant control of guardianship and conservatorship to the daughter, I can't do it. And I can't do it because the sister 10 years ago determined who she wanted to take care of her and the case in case she needed to be cared for.
Yeah.
And so it simply worked out because the affairs were in order, the business was taken care of, that sister's wishes were granted. And her sister, still at 88, had full capacity and was able to handle her affairs. And so it was.
We need to take a short break. Our guest is Nadine Roberts Cornish, the author of Tears in My Gumbo, The Caregiver's Recipe for Resilience. Stick around. We'll be back in a moment.
More of The Urban Connection, straight ahead. Stay tuned. Now back to The Urban Connection. Here's your host, Leonard Birdsong.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Nadine Roberts Cornish, the author of Tears in My Gumbo, The Caregiver's Recipe for Resilience. One of the things you touch on in your book is how to not die caring for a loved one. Tell us a bit about that.
First and foremost, I think it's important that the caregiver understands what it is they're getting into. And a lot of times, you know, you have no idea. It's important to be what I call a conscious caregiver, Leonard. And a conscious caregiver, I define that as caring on purpose, with intention and a plan. Even though caregiving may hit you and it may come completely out of the blue, and you may find yourself being a responsible party that you may not have planned to be, it's important if you say yes to the assignment that you put a plan in place and that you care on purpose and with intention. And it's equally as important that you understand that self-care is the most important care in your caregiving journey. Now I'm going to repeat that because I really want people to get this. Self-care is the most important care in your caregiving and caregiving journey. You cannot take care of somebody else and make yourself an afterthought or put your own needs on the back burner. I know caregivers who run back and forth, they're going to 2 and 3 doctor's appointments a week for their loved ones, but they canceled their own appointment. And so making yourself a priority is absolutely a must. The next thing I'll say is find, know, and use your resources.
So does this have anything with what you call super caregiving syndrome?
Super caregiving syndrome. That's the caregiver who never needs any help. If you ask, hey, can I give you a hand? Is there something I can do for you? Oh, no, I got it. Caregiving is a community effort. It requires a community effort. It requires participation by family members, by friends, and anybody else that can be brought to the table.
Yeah, most people don't understand that. As a matter of fact, many people I've seen as caretakers do their job grudgingly. You know that, grudgingly.
Mm-hmm. There are those who do it grudgingly, and let me tell you, if that's your attitude, then you're going to have a hard time.
I guess so.
It's going to be a tough process. Attitude is really everything. And if you're saying yes to caring for someone, you have to do it in the spirit of love. You have to do it in the spirit of kindness. There's a story I talk about. I call it the poster child of caregiving. Miss Yvonne, she was absolutely impeccable with her attitude. She was caring for two people, her mother who had Alzheimer's and her brother who had MS.
Mm.
And I used to watch her, and I would marvel at her ability to just find so much grace every single day in this process. And she said, these are my loved ones. I have the responsibility of caring for them, and I have the honor of caring for them.
Uh-huh.
This is my honor to take care of the people who love me, who have loved me, who brought me into this world. And it was her big brother she was taking care of who had MS. And she just did it with just an impeccable amount of grace and dignity in the process.
Hmm. And you liked that, didn't you?
I loved it.
Good.
I learned a lot from that.
All right. Let's go back to old Celtic words. Anamkara. Anamkara. What does that mean?
Yes. So Anamkara, A-N-A-M-Kara, C-A-R-A. This is a Celtic term that I discovered several years ago. It's an Irish term which loosely translates to soul friend. And in my caregiving experience, I have come to understand that what Anamkara means is carer of the soul. And what I love about this tradition was that the doctors, the nurses, the priests in the Irish tradition were simply revered for caring for those who were about to transition. And they were revered because they felt that it was such an incredible honor for anyone to be chosen, to be the selected soul to partner with another soul that was ready to depart.
Mm-hmm.
And so that meaning touched me deeply because I had the honor of being there when my mother passed, when my grandmother passed. I've had several people in my life, several clients in my life that I was blessed. I was the chosen one to be there and to companion them through the caregiving journey and also as they prepared to transition. Anamkara, carer of the soul.
All right. What made you write this book in the first place? I know that you are a great carer, but how did you have time to sit down and write this book and why?
So I knew throughout my mother's caregiving, my caregiving journey with my mom, that I knew that my mother was not going through all of this for herself. I didn't then have the vision that I would actually be supporting caregivers around the country. I didn't have that vision then, but there was something in me that knew that I needed to document what was happening, and I did. And so once I started my business after my mother passed, the caregiver's guardian, one of the things that I advise my caregivers to do, not only is it just a great record keeper, but it really is a great tool to be able to go back to. So I encourage them to journal or to make case notes around what was happening during their caregiving journey with their loved ones and also with themselves. So I did that, and I did that. I encouraged my clients to do it. And when my client's loved one would transition, I would always write a short story to them celebrating the journey.
Uh-huh.
And these short stories, they would ask me, oh, my gosh, this is just so amazing. And they were so appreciative, and they would ask me, you know, take this story and share it. Share, you know, put it in a book. You need to do a book of all of these stories. And so eventually I did. So there was like this knowing and not knowing, but being obedient to what Spirit, I think, was saying to me, document, document. And so when it came time to write Tears in My Gumbo, it was very evident what that content would be. And it would be my journey as well as the journey of the caregivers that I've been blessed to work with over the past decade.
Well, that's good. I noticed that you want people who have support groups and book clubs to read the book.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's something good for them.
Absolutely.
And the book has been out since 2017. I'm sure it's on Amazon.com and in bookstores.
It is indeed.
It's a good read.
Yes. And I think it's timeless.
I think it is, too. I have not been a caregiver, you know, but I understand a lot of things in this book. I know my time will probably come when I'll have to do more of it, but I'm glad that you gave it to me, okay? I really am.
Well, I really appreciate that you took the time to read it.
Well, it's a good read. I hope that others do this. Book clubs and support groups probably should read it. You have some questions here. You have a little section that says, attitude is everything with respect to caregiving. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. It is indeed. This is an issue that impacts so many people. Just think about the people that you know, and as our society ages to the tune of 10,000 people turning 65 every day until the year 2030, we are absolutely going to be in need of taking care of each other.
Right. I noticed that statistic, and it's sort of frightening, isn't it? 10,000 people will turn 65 until 2030. My gosh.
Yeah, that's a lot of folks. For the first time in history, we're going to have more people over 65 than we have children between the ages of 1 and 5.
Yep.
That'll be the first time that's ever happened.
Yep, you're absolutely right about that. Well, Nadine Roberts-Cornish, it's a pleasure to speak to you. Your book is available on Amazon and in bookstores. I understand you're going to write a couple more.
And if your audience would like a signed copy, they can go to my website, which is tcgcares.com, to order a copy and get a signed copy if they'd like that.
All right, then. Well, thank you very much for coming on with you, and God bless you with the work that you're doing, okay?
Thank you so much, Leonard.
All right.
Bless you as well. Take care.
You too. We just finished talking with Nadine Roberts-Cornish, who is a certified senior advisor and gerontologist, a caregiver expert, consultant, and an author. And that's all the time we have for this week. I'm Leonard Birdsong, inviting you to join us right here next week for more of The Urban Connection.
That wraps up this episode of The Urban Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of The Urban Connection.